Jared Bowen. This is The Culture Show. Coming up, the stars of tomorrow here today. We have a preview of the Boston Youth Symphony Orchestra's season finale. But right now, it's time for our monthly dispatch from the Arnold Arboretum. For June, we are talking to someone who truly sweats the small stuff as the curator of the Bonsai and Penjing collection. He is Chris Copeland, manager of plant production. He joins us to talk about their miniature masterpieces, how to see them, and what it takes to keep these plants thriving. Chris Copeland, welcome to the show.
Hi, Jared. Can you hear me?
I was just telling our listeners how I was a bad bonsai dad, so I had to bring my bonsai tree to bonsai triage. So we'll talk to you about the care that it takes, but walk us through what bonsais are, because I think there are some myths around what they are.
Absolutely. Okay, so let's start with, first of all, bonsai is an ancient tradition, and we are very familiar here in the West on the practice of bonsai, but it actually, there's a precursor to bonsai, which is Penjing, and Penjing is a Chinese tradition, and you can picture Penjing as being more of a landscape in a pot, so dwarfing these natural elements of a landscape. We're talking forests, we're talking rocks and water features, and shrinking them down into a forest in a pot. And bonsai was developed by the Japanese to become a little more formal, a little simpler, as opposed to Penjing. And it really is a dwarf tree in a very minimalist appearance and design. And they take on many forms from formal upright structures to these cascading, very natural waterfall shapes of trees. But it is essentially, in very few words, a dwarf tree in a pot.
And so how does that happen? And of course, we know that it takes, in some cases, centuries to happen because there are very renowned bonsai collections with very, very old specimens. And you can walk us through your collection, too. But what do you have to do to have a, quote unquote, regular tree become a dwarf tree?
Yeah, great question. So it is an artificial process of dwarfing. So a question I get all the time in the pavilion is it genetic? Is it artificial? How does this happen to a tree? And it is artificial. The crucial ingredient to bonsaiing is the repotting process. So it is on a systematic cycle. Every few years, we're taking these trees out of their pots and we're pruning back that root system. And we're keeping that root system in check. Trees naturally want to maintain this root to shoot ratio. And by pruning back that root system, you're in turn stunting that above ground growth. So you're really keeping that canopy in check. And technically, any tree species can be dwarfed with enough patience and with enough care. And it's a challenge over a very long period of time, but it really is balancing that root to shoot ratio of a tree.
So what does the care involve, the care that I clearly didn't employ? By the way, my bonsai thrives still. I gave it a better home, somebody who is more home more and can take be more attentive with it. But how do you describe the level of care it requires?
It's constant. As potted plants, there. Luckily, we have a greenhouse facility where I work at the Arnold Arboretum. And this is a team effort. It is a daily operation. They're cared for by our greenhouse staff. Because they're in pots, they dry out, unlike a lot of our landscape plants that we see that are insulated by the earth. These potted plants need a lot of care. So each plant is checked three times a day for water, and we are regularly, constantly monitoring them for insect pests and diseases. We actually have we have a small staff, and one of our full-time staff members, our plant propagator, Sarah, she started our team last year, and she coined this hilarious phrase, bonsaiety, which is very real. And you probably experienced this to the point where you had to find a foster parent.
I sure did. Yep.
Yeah. And it's when you stop to think about it, and for me, I've been doing this for a few years, and it's sometimes routine. But when you think about it, it's this unbroken chain of care every day that links us directly to the original caretakers of these plants, which can span over hundreds of years. So it is a daily chore, but a very privileged chore where water is the most important thing, but also just being aware of the daily stresses, especially being in a city being in a temperate climate where we experience four seasons, and it's a daily effort to keep these trees out of harm's way.
We are speaking with Chris Copeland. He is the curator of the Bonsai in Penjing collection at the Arnold Arboretum. Tell me about the collection and the great specimens that you have there.
Sure. So bonsai became quite popular here in the West in the early 1900s, especially after World War II. And that's around the era that that these trees came to Boston. So our core collection is the Lars Anderson collection. And the bonsai were brought to the Arboretum in the 1930s by Lars Anderson, who was an ambassador to Japan. And he started to, in his travels in Japan, he developed an interest in bonsai and began to import trees around 1913. And he was purchasing plants from the Yokohama Nursery in Japan. And towards the end of his life, in the late 1930s, 1937, the Anderson family started to donate part of this collection. And by 1949, Isabella, his wife, were giving the last of the 39 trees that they had acquired over the last few decades of their lives. So our collection originally comprised of around 39 trees. And again, this is the 1930s and 1940s. And the core collection includes these compact Hinoki cypress that are these evergreen trees that are shaped very much like Mount Fuji, if you can picture it. If you've ever seen these bonsai in person, they look like Mount Fuji covered in cloud cover. So they're pruned with cloud pruning. They have these very spaced out branches and very, very intently shaped in this mountain figure. And so our Hinoki cypress are these flagship trees and represent the core of our collections, but we also have a wide variety of species from that original Lars Anderson group, which include Japanese maples and eastern white pine and a trident maple as well.
How is this very much a part of Japanese culture and gardening and finding serenity and peacefulness in the care?
That's such a great question. It really does come down to patience. I mean, this is an art form. These trees are living sculptures, and it's this incredible challenge of keeping this living organism alive every day as long as possible, but also representing this living sculpture, representing this art form of how can we represent the rigors of nature, represent the environmental stresses that all trees, all living things in nature survive, hopefully, throughout their entire lifespan. And to distill that in a small sculpture, in a dwarf sculpture that's in a pot. And the goal is really to increase that challenge over time. So how flat of a container can we train this tree into? How can we push these boundaries of stress while maintaining this perfectly healthy specimen and shaped in a way where we're representing age through nature? It's very much this confluence of art and science. And our pavilion is this very special place in the Arboretum where you come to, and many folks stumble upon it, and it's this very quiet, very serene, and very contemplative space where you can think about trees and just what they go through in their lives. And we represent many species of trees around the world, and we try to distill really what it means to be a tree in a pot for the public to see and appreciate.
Well, I know we're not supposed to have favorite children necessarily, but I understand that you may be especially fond of one particular tree, an olive tree in the collection.
Yeah, so it's a great question. I get asked this all the time. What's my favorite bonsai? And it feels like a cop-out answer where it does change throughout the season. Depends on my mood. It depends on, you know, really how the plants are behaving. And, you know, there are trees that are in flower, trees that look particularly great in the fall for their fall color. And so I do admit my favorites change throughout the year. But right now I do love this European olive. This is a particularly quintessential Boston bonsai. So this olive, it's a European olive. It was a cutting collected from Mount Olympus in Greece. and this was sent to the Boston Museum of Science several decades ago. It was raised as a cutting, and the intention was it for to be a part of the wreath of the winner of the 100th Boston Marathon winner. And it didn't end up at the Boston Marathon, and in 2001 it was donated to the Arnold and incorporated into the collection by Peter Deltredegi. But it just represents the Boston tradition. It represents that not all plans go as you expect, and you can turn that into something beautiful and something timeless. And right now this olive is in flower. They're inconspicuous flowers, but I have personally not seen this specimen flower in my experience here at the Arnold, and we're hoping in a few months it has miniature olives. That would be a first for our collection.
Extraordinary. Well, we look forward to that update. Before I let you go, I have to ask if your life has changed just in the very particular care that you were outlining, the patience it takes, all of the that it takes to take care of bonsais. Have you changed since you began maintaining this collection?
Honestly, it has. So as a greenhouse professional, we're often behind the scenes. We're fenced off. We're in a secure facility. And being part of the bonsai collection is our window to the public. So I've really capitalized on the opportunities to talk trees with everyday Bostonians, everyday visitors. I meet neighbors. I meet people from all around the world that travel here just to see our bonsai collection, just to see plants that they recognize from Japan or from Korea or from China. And anytime I'm in the pavilion watering, which is such a treat, it's routine, but it's never lost on me how special it is just to say professionally, I get to take care of bonsai and spend time with these very old and timeless trees. But it's really my window to the public, and it's how I get to connect with people that want to know more about trees that maybe wouldn't necessarily think about what it is to be a tree or how hard it is to keep a tree alive. And, you know, the Arboretum is full of trees, and we're all always looking up and appreciating the magnitude of the trees in the Arboretum. But in the Bonsai Pavilion, this is where trees meet you face to face. You can see them eye to eye and really, really just appreciate all that goes into being a living thing in nature.
Well, Chris Copeland, thank you for making the time with us today. And do please keep us posted about the olives.
Thank you, Jared.
Chris Copeland is the manager of plant production and the curator of the Bonsai and Penjing collection at the Arnold Arboretum. To learn more about how you can see them and everything else that the Arboretum has to offer for free, I might add, go to arboretum.harvard.edu. Chris Copeland, again, thank you so much. Coming up, for the first time in its history, the Boston Youth Symphony Orchestra has a home of its own. That conversation is next on The Culture Show.